This is the unwritten.
What's good, readers and writers? You have joined the Unwritten. This is a Journey Writer call, and my name is Marissa.
My name is Susan.
Hey, y'all. This is Infinity. Thanks for joining us today.
And so excited today because today we're kind of talking about a topic that I think is, I've just thought about this for a few years now. It's kind of interesting to think about how the world of books will be affected as we go on. Of course, I think today's focus is Gen Z, but as I've been on social media as of late, the Alpha generation has started to join us, and it's been kind of interesting to see how books are changing and how people read and how people write has been changing as the generations have gone on and how technology has affected that. And so today we'll be talking a little bit about that and how we've watched technology change reading and how we've watched writing change too. And I guess we can just kind of go off of our questions that we actually have. So I guess the first question is, what forms of technology and digital media do you guys notice are creating conversation, positive or negative, in the book world?
I can go first. Just let me think. I guess something that I have noticed when it comes to technology, and this is something that I've benefited from, but I also think it can go too far, is just kind of AI writing. I haven't used ChatGPT or anything like that, but I have kind of looked into it before. But something that I'm familiar with is called Grammarly, which I think we're all familiar with. We all used it in college and everything. And I came across this video the other day, and it was just about AI and writing, and this whole guy, and I shared it with you guys. It was a guy talking about writing a book through ChatGPT, where you basically just give the prompts and it writes the whole book chapter by chapter. And to me, like, I guess if people wanted to do that, that's fine. But if that were me personally, I don't think that's something that I could say is my own work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't feel like authentically mine. So that's kind of my first thought when it comes to technology and digital media.
I think so. I grew up reading a lot of, it's kind of interesting. When I was in my graduate program, I remember I took a publishing class, and something the professor emphasized, Dr. Gill, she kept saying that, and like, well, you know, y'all remember when Kindles and all that became really popular? We had to be like, maybe in our final 2 years of high school, and ebooks became really popular. And what Dr. Gill was saying, that when ebooks became popular, for some reason they just were not selling. And I remember being in the class and thinking about the fact that, like, for Gen Xers, it was kind of one of those things that, like, I mean, not just Gen Xers, but also millennials, the fact that they grew up reading paper books. So as appealing as it can be from in the beginning to read Kindles or this is that, that kind of stuff, like, was of no interest in. And by the time you get to Gen Zers, we grow up reading books on the computer, partially not legally. Some people were not reading this stuff legally. But a lot of us grew up reading our textbooks online, taking classes online, using the computer for everything. So then by the time we get to the age where we can afford to get our own Kindle and afford to get ebooks on our own, of course they're gonna start selling, because you're selling to the right generation, right? And so I grew up reading a lot of stuff off of Wattpad, now a webtoon, listening to audiobooks as the preference instead of like actually buying the book and reading it, mostly because I don't really have the time, but also just because of access and accessibility. And so I just think about it in that way too, as we think about, so I think about how ChatGPT is like this movement away from, in a way, it's just another movement into how technology changes accessibility, but also changes authenticity. And so, in a way, kind of going back to what Susan was saying, it's kind of terrifying. To me, it's kind of terrifying to know that, like, books can, that somebody could, like, take a book and kind of just be like, I'm gonna make it up using this robot. And it not be me, and it be sellable. I think that was kind of interesting. I think when we wrote these questions up, I was telling Infinity, like, at Publishers Weekly, they have a whole system now where they have to, like, authenticate the book before they actually review it. And setting up rules now, they were in such a rush to set up these rules about how to authenticate that, or how to, you know, give verification, almost like giving a blue check on Twitter. Like, they were like, gotta come up with this thing and this thing so that we don't just accept any kind of book.
I have a question. Sorry to interrupt, but because you're saying that, have they had a problem with, like, people submitting books that were written by AI? Is that one of the reasons why they started that process?
Well, it was a preventative thing. I think they had some people send some books in. When you're reviewing books, you're dealing with a lot of different people sending in books that are not theirs, or that have stolen plots and all that. So you already have to deal with that. So they had already started doing preventative things to authenticate the books, but ChatGPT definitely had people scurry in the office, like, in meetings, trying to figure out what needed to be done, what preventative measures could be taken so that they don't have to deal with so much of that in the future. But that was a very interesting thing. And even too, when we talk about this, because it's been a while since we wrote these questions up. It's been a while since we wrote up this script. But Infinity mentioned, like, I don't think she mentioned that ChatGPT might not be such a big deal now, because there have been so many arguments about it and about what is authentic and what effect it'll have on writers in the future. And so I think that's also an interesting question. What effect all technology, all resources in writing resources will have on writers in the future and readers in the future?
I think also too, right? Like, technology, AI, those types of things, we often get a little in a frenzy about it, like, initially. But I think, like, as I mentioned in the intro episode, I mentioned that I work in higher education, and I know that a lot of professors were kind of worried that, you know, students would submit any work that was not theirs. But after the semester started, it was very easy to detect when a work was written by artificial intelligence, right? The same way that you get on the phone and you kind of talk to a customer service rep, and it's just that human piece that's missing. It's the same way with writing. So initially I kind of was a little apprehensive, and I thought, hey, like, you know, maybe this will be a problem. But as I'm interacting with it, I'm realizing that it's missing a soul, you know, like, it has the words, it's saying the right thing. It sounds very scholarly, but it's missing that authentic, as you mentioned, that voice. It's missing that piece. When I used to be a tutor in the writing center, it was very obvious whenever students would copy and paste people's work without citing them, because the tone shifted. So I think, like, as we, you know, progress in society and have works that are published, I think it'll be pretty easy to detect when something is not written by an actual human. So I actually don't think it's as much of a concern as we initially anticipated it being.
I think, too, as you were saying that, it made me think about the way, of course, adding a soul into everything we do and everything we write is kind of a thing that's very subconscious, right? Like, you kind of just do it, not just naturally, but even the way we write characters that are not human is kind of interesting. I always think about this when I think about the way humans write about zombies or supernatural things, zombies or aliens or anything like that. Those things are still very human in their own ways. And so it's kind of interesting how AI is just not capable of replicating that, no matter how much humans design and code and, I don't know, and work really hard to make it human. Because even now when we think about phone calls, that, you know, you might be bank phone calls and that sort of thing, and the AI person is talking to you. Sometimes I'd be like, there's a real person talking to me. And then the further they go on, the more I'm like, oh, no. No, this is just a robot. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting how that will continue. That probably will continue to progress. And it'll be interesting to see how developers decide to not just progress, but to build a subconscious for AI, because I think that's a big part of like what ends up missing in situations like ChatGPT is that subconscious part, mm-hmm. that soul that's missing. It'll be interesting to see how that progresses, and kind of terrifying again.
Yeah, it's because you mentioned Infinity that like at your university they use like there's a way that they use they can see when something is written by an actual student. Marcy, you said that Publishers Weekly has a process. Mm-hmm. I came across this video of a girl kind of showing a story that she's written, or like a page of it, and she would put it into ChatGPT just for editing purposes, not to write anything for her, but just to like grammar check it, I guess. But then she also wanted to show a difference between like her writing versus what ChatGPT would write. And so she put in like a prompt similar to what her like little one pager was about. And she put them side by side and you would read the differences. And it's like you said, Infinity, there in the human written story, there was a soul to it. Whereas in the AI version of the story, it just had that missing element to it. And there was something else that I noticed, because it got me wondering about the education system and students, you know, not writing their own papers and not putting in the effort of, you know, a job well done when you do it yourself. But there is actually a program now, and I'm blanking on what it's called, but you can actually put in a paper kind of similarly like with Grammarly. You can have it downloaded and it'll kind of show you areas that are wrong or that you might need to fix. Or it'll show you plagiarism. This, you put it in similar to like ChatGPT, and it gives it a score. And the score is almost based on that human element in the writing, which was really interesting, because it the system that was created, and it was created by someone who graduated from Princeton, that I do remember. And it's like, if it's a really low score, like a 4, it's most likely written by artificial intelligence. But if it's high, like a 9 or a 10, it was written by an actual person. So it's really interesting to see how that progresses, because I do think AI kind of has its place. But I think, like you said, considering that there are now things combating, you know, students and people just not putting in the work or the authenticity into their own writing, I think does make me feel better about it. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say.
And I think, you know, what's interesting, and that sounds like a pretty cool invention, but I laughed when you said that, because I'm like, okay, it's still AI judging AI. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a human judging the authenticity of this piece, but it's still AI. So I like to think that there's still going to be some flaws there with that system. You know, I'm sure it's pretty good. I'm pretty sure the margin of error might be pretty slim, but it's funny to think that here we have, you know, AI asking us if, you know, telling us if something is real. It's kind of like those, are you a robot type of questions. I'm like, you're the robot. What do you mean? What do you mean asking me if I'm the robot? And there's been a couple of times where I even failed some of those, like, are you a robot questions, those like recapture things. What? I promise you I'm a human. So it's interesting to see. You know, I'd be curious to follow up on how that plays out and, you know, the level of accurateness it'll have, you know, when judging papers and things like that. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, because when I first watched it, I thought, well, that's helpful, because there was, like, the concern, like, teachers had a concern of, like, how are we going to know the difference? Which, like you said, after you read, you know, the papers or the stories, there is a clear difference. Mm-hmm. But, which I haven't experienced that, so I wouldn't know the difference as well as probably some people, and unless it's very obvious. But that's a really good point that I didn't think about, was that is actually AI judging artificial intelligence. Yeah. And it's just, there's so many different ways of looking at it, but we can, I guess we've kind of gone on to the next section. What are the pros and cons of this technology? We, like, as a reader, what are some of the positives that come along with adapting to how readers read? Which I know, Marissa, you had mentioned, like, ebooks and, like, reading from a phone.
Yeah. Oh, man. Reading from a phone. God, help us. if, you know, what's interesting, I think, so it made me think about the timeline, with where the real timeline is for technology, for stuff like AI to become a part of not just the academic sphere, well, most of the academic sphere, but I don't know if y'all know, y'all remember Turnitin.com?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Did you never have a season? That's so no. funny, because I thought Infinity would be like, no.
I've never heard of that. What is it?
I think, well, don't forget, I do work in higher ed, so I'm familiar with it. But I think I've actually ever had to use it while I was an undergrad.
Oh, well, so I used it in high school. I didn't think they were still using it. At this point, I thought they were just using Canva or whatever. Canva. But it takes me back to, like, thinking about Turnitin.com and kind of how AI has been used for how AI has been used to grade and check for what were they checking for? What's the word?
Plagiarism.
Plagiarism. Yes, checking for plagiarism. But what you said earlier made me think about that. It's actually been a very long time coming. And thinking also about how, in terms of how we, so I want to agree with Susan that AI has its place in the same way. At the same time, I think about, in terms of how the positives for technology for readers, I think it's really weird. I think on one hand, it's about accessibility, right? It's about being able to, I think there are a lot of opportunities for me as a kid to rely on Wattpad, especially. I don't want to say the other ways I was reading books, but to rely on Wattpad especially, because it not only exposed me to potentially great writers of the future, but it exposed me to just a variety of topics that are not established in big publishing, like interracial relationships and, you know, just some supernatural things that are just not well established in big publishing. So in that way, especially when it comes to being on your phone, it was dope. It was a great way to reach an audience and to be a part of a community that otherwise would not be there. And in the same way, if we think about technology in terms of social media, right now, I think when I was younger, Bookstagram and BookTok and even BookTwitter, even though those Twitter was present and Instagram were present, I never really was a part of any of those communities when and reading. And those are such explosive communities that publishing relies on so much right now. So in that way, technology is, you know, in those few ways, technology is really important. That does not mean that big publishing actually relies on technology in the way that it should, but readers do. In terms of building community and in terms of accessibility. So I think that's really dope.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you kind of like mentioned this, and this is like related but unrelated, if that makes sense. So, you know, I think something that's cool about what we do in our work for Journey Writer is that I forgot the term you used, but it was such a nice term. I think like innovators or
innovation?
What was the term? An innovation team. And with that, we have to come up with like, you know, posts and websites and blah, blah, blah. And so I think that it is pretty cool to see there's two sides of the coin, right? Like one, it's pretty cool to like just go on Wix, pick a template, and then make something for your small business, especially if you're just starting out, versus having to actually hire someone to do it. And even like Canva, like making graphics and things like that has become a lot more easier, accessible, quick, affordable for people that just need like quick little social media thing. The flip side of that, as I kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, is that, you know, jobs, right? Like people are no longer searching out for a graphic designer people are not necessarily looking for someone to build their website, right? But going back to my original point is that for me, as a user of Canva, it's easy for me to detect whenever someone used Canva for their flyer. Every time I see something, I'm like, oh yeah, she did it with Canva. Or he did that with Canva. I remember I was visiting a high school and they didn't even take off. I don't know if y'all are super familiar with Canva, but whenever you're like supposed to insert something like a website, it says like really great site. And so these people on the flyer, they didn't even take off that really great site part of it. And I'm like, yeah, it's so obvious that they use Canva versus like creating this flyer themselves or hiring a graphic designer. And so I definitely think that it's positive that, you know, people, like I said, in small businesses especially can make use of it. But I do think it is taking away some of the jobs. But then going back again, it's like, you know, we do still want that originality. So I think, like everything, there's pros and cons.
Yeah, I think when it comes to like pros and cons that I've seen, kind of going back to book talk that you were talking about, Marissa, because I was watching this video of this girl kind of talking about, you know, book talk and, you know, recommending books. Is it beneficial? Or, you know, do certain books, because she was doing kind of like hot take opinions, which I know we're going to eventually do an episode on that. But one of the questions was, do you think book talk hypes up like the same book or like a particular genre or something? And like they, like it doesn't really stray to something else, because you had mentioned like books about interracial relationships or, you know, type sci-fi type stuff that it may not be as popular anymore. But I think when it comes to social media and the technology in that area, I almost feel like if you do write a book and it gets, you know, someone who's on, you know, social media and who likes to talk about books and writing, I almost feel like if they, you know, talk about it, if one talks about it, they may all talk about it, which would then, you know, be promotion for it, which I think in some sense is really good, because, you know, I feel like if they're going to promote it, they really do love the story. But one of the things she also asked was, do you think some of the books are hyped up too much, like particular, maybe not even a book, but a particular author, because obviously authors have styles, they may be doing a series. Do you guys kind of see that as a pro or con? Because I was a little indifferent about it, because I like getting book recommendations. But at the same time, I kind of like going into a bookstore, you know,
and just finding something.
And just finding something versus going straight to Amazon and putting something in my cart because someone recommended it to me on Instagram.
I think it's a balancing game, right? I think it's important to hear what the people are reading about and seeing if that's something you're into. But like I said, I was never a part of those communities growing up. So I was really one of those kids that grew up kind of just like picking up something or getting on somewhere and hearing about the audiobook and then just letting that mug play and seeing what happens. I grew up with that, and I see the joys of that, because it does open your eyes to a lot of things that you probably would have never thought about doing because nobody else doing it, right? But then I also, like I said, see the pros and being like, well, what is everybody else reading? I think the problem that does happen, going back to something you said, Susan, is that especially on book talk, people are recommending the same stuff. It's the same books over and over again. I don't know how many times I got to look at Icebreaker on book talk before they let it go. Just let it go. We heard you the first time. But they have a way, and that's the way they build community. I think they're, in a way, Bookstagram is still trying to figure out how to build community, and Bookstagram in its own way too is still trying to figure out how to build community where we talk about these books, but we move on to the next ones. You know, we get away, we are obsessed with this, but let's, what's the next thing? So you just have to be balanced, I think, within yourself, because I think there are pros to both of those. You don't want to become stuck in a community. You don't want to be stuck on a topic. You don't want to be stuck on even a genre. But you also don't want to be left out, you know?
The other thing that I thought about too with social media and books and them being promoted is like, you know, your algorithm The more you watch particular videos about certain books or you like and comment on them, it kind of like, I think your algorithm adjusts to it. And so like now, whenever you're scrolling on Instagram or TikTok, you're probably going to see a video about like the Sarah J. Maas series or Colleen Hoover or John Grisham, whatever, you know, whatever it is that you really enjoy because you want to hear other people's opinions about it. I love hearing other people's opinions about different stories because they're going to have different viewpoints on why they like it, why they don't like it. But I just think it's really interesting how the algorithm also just adjusts to what you prefer, because that's kind of another piece of technology that I didn't think about either. But I think that can also kind of cater to influence because it figures out your niche or like the topics that you like. And so it shows you more of what it knows that you enjoy. So that's another thing, which I think is a pro, because then you'll get more information on something you enjoy. But yeah, I don't know.
It's a pro, but it also leaves then the responsibility of you to find other things.
Yeah, right. That would be the con.
Yeah, I think I usually experience that with YouTube, where like I'll be to watch something four times probably. And they will keep recommending it to me. Like, I never watched it. And I'll be like, well, I watched that when it came out because I got the notification for it. Why are you telling me that? So I think in a lot of ways, even the algorithm can throw you off and not be to your best benefit. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to say, let Infinity go.
I mean, honestly, I'm honestly, you know, not super on book talk or anything. I do see a couple of the things I'm familiar with, you know, the Colleen Hoovers, and I do see them being promoted at like Target and things like that. I think our generation is just so trends based, you know, like we are, you know, we always want to do what's popular or what's trending. And I think as you both summed it up and said, you know, it's just a balancing game. If you really truly love books and you really truly love, you know, whatever particular genre you would like, you might kind of, you know, check out what's trending. But at the same time, like as Susan mentioned, nothing beats just going to a Barnes and Noble or strolling down the aisle in like Target or somewhere and picking out something that stands out to you. So I think there's a place. It seems like people are, you know, getting their love for reading back at this age, which is pretty cool. And I think in one of our episodes, you talked about, you know, having that burnout. So it's cool to see people not being burnt out by reading, and they're getting back into reading. So I think, you know, it has its place. Everything has its place. And, you know, it will definitely serve a purpose. Not sure how long it will last, but that could be our version of book clubs, right? Like, I hate to say it, but a lot of our generation's stuff is online, you know? And so you can have a book club that's virtual with someone based off of these popular readings that you may not have known about prior to that. Or it just creates a sense of community. Even if it's not a formal book club, it's like, oh, let me see what this person has to say about XYZ, reading comments, you know, reading book reviews, things like that. That can form a sense of community. And I think that's something that our generation is lacking in. You know, I read something that said that we don't have enough third spaces. And for those of you that don't know what a third space is, it's essentially somewhere that's not work or home, right? Like, we have bars, like, ooh, we have some libraries, but like, I've seen that they are even taking away some libraries. Yeah. So there's not enough third spaces for people to just come together, form community, and just be human, you know? I think that that's something that we're missing. And so our generation is just kind of figuring out how to substitute that in a virtual way. So I think that definitely could be a positive in the fact that people get lonely. So it's good to have that community, form that community with others in that way.
I know one of the questions we have on here are, how do these mediums play off of each other? Like, for example, television may affect the way a reader reads a novel. It may become more difficult or uninteresting. They may only read novels if they have visuals like Webtoon or Yonder. one of the things that that made me think about was, I feel like some stories, maybe not like books, but maybe like fan fiction or stuff that's written online, I feel like some plots are written to get to the point quicker because of attention spans. Because an app that I, something that I kept getting an ad for, and I finally watched it, it's this app called Real Short, and it's basically a movie put into like 1 minute clips.
Yeah.
And it's like 30 little clips, and they're 1 minute long, maybe a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And it tells a whole story. And so that made me start, because it made me think back to when I would read stories on Wattpad on my phone. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that writing was like, there was some good writing that I came across on Wattpad, don't get me wrong, but then there was some where they just wanted to get to the point of the story. There wasn't a whole lot of character building. The detail wasn't thought out as much. It's just plot point to plot point. There's not the in-between where you really get the nitty-gritty of the story and the building of it all. Because that's something that I've noticed, and I wanted to get y'all's opinion on that too. If you guys think attention spans have kind of played a role in technology, I feel like would also play a role in attention spans, just because of, like, TikTok, the videos are really short, and same with the videos on Instagram. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You have 100%. Go ahead, go, baby.
I even feel like my attention span isn't the way it used to be, because, like, I'd be watching, I guess it depends on what mood I'm in, but sometimes I'm watching a movie or a series or something, and I find myself picking up the phone, like, in the middle of it, and I'm like, wait, like, you need to focus on, you know, just watching what you're watching. Like, I feel like at some point, I, like, for me, watching TV was a good way to not be on my phone, which is funny because it's still screen time. And I feel like when we were younger, it's like, oh no, you can't watch too much TV. You have to, like, go outside and play or read a book or something like that. But now it's funny that TV is the healthier alternative for me than being on my phone. So I have to find myself doing things that keep me engaged. And I don't know if it's just like a dopamine thing. I think our generation is really addicted to that, like, little dopamine burst, you know, from getting messages and seeing funny things. But I do think we need to get a break from that in order to keep our attention spans. Even like sitting in meetings, like Zoom calls and things like that, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is such a snooze fest. But it's like everything doesn't have to be entertaining. But I kind of feel like that's how we have conditioned ourselves to be in this generation. Everything is a, you know, a hashtag or a fun little quick note or a one-liner or things like that. And, you know, I definitely think it's affecting our attention span. Even those of us that are on the older end of the Gen Z spectrum, I definitely think it's playing a role in that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think, apparently we're called Zillennials, but that's for another time. But I actually was going to save this for unpopular opinions, because I think I'm very passionate about the fact that for me, so many books as a writer, as a writer that went to school to study writing, it's kind of terrifying to think about the kind of book I potentially want to publish, because the books that I'm seeing now that are selling commercially are... They feel like Wattpad books, in that you have that, I just need to get from point A to point B to point C. Mm-hmm. And all of it feels like you're still missing so much of that actual, it kind of goes back to what Infinity said. You're missing a bit of what makes that story human. Mm-hmm. Those details, the how do we get from that? At this point, I don't ever feel like I'm being taken into the book or I'm being drawn into the book or I'm becoming that character. You know how you come out of a movie mm-hmm. and you feel like you were the
empowered
ass? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't feel that anymore when I read a lot of the books that are published at this point. And you want to be like, well, maybe it's because I just got older, or maybe, you know, taking on a degree affected that to some degree. But then I look back at my personal writing, or I look back at the writing of my classmates, and I'm like, no, something's happening in publishing and with readers that's mm-hmm. making it to where now they just want you to tell them what's going to happen. They mm-hmm. want you to tell them. They don't want to have to think about it. And it's funny because I got so excited about Hunger Games this last, we're going to see the movie in this month. But I got so excited because on TikTok at this point, people are going back to the previous Hunger Games books, and they're getting, you're having so many theories going on about something that is gone, it's done. She ain't writing, she is not going to write the Hunger Games. But the amount of people who have so many theories, and they're so passionate, and they're thinking about things that the author wanted them to think about versus what they just saw on the surface, right? Mm-hmm. You don't get that a lot with a lot of books that are really popular. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you can go back to books that were published before we all went to college and have people be so passionate about the thoughts that are supposed to be happening, the mm-hmm. social, because that's what books are for. I don't think people, it's so interesting. There was this one book talker, and I can never remember this girl's name whenever I need to remember her name, but she is so very popular. And if you just so happen to see one of her videos, she cries a lot. But she's extreme. She's one of those people like gets up and screams about a book. She don't really tell you what the book is about, but she'll be screaming at the camera and she'll be enthusiastic. And something she said the other day, she was like, you know, she was talking to a particular group of people who always have opinions about the kind of books people read. And she was just kind of saying, like, you're a mean person if you tell somebody that they can't read, they shouldn't read this style of book or this kind of writer or the one that's really simple, a writer that's really simple. I'm not the type of person to tell you can't read. You're not a reader if you read a simple writer. But I am the type of person that's going to point out when a book is just not good, right? Mm-hmm. And when you feel like you came out of that mug and you're just kind of like, well, I finished it. Like, next one. Let's try to finish the next one. But I feel like every book I read now feels like that. Mm-hmm. There are no theories. I come out of it like, okay, I read that. I have no extra thoughts. I didn't learn anything. And you don't have to learn anything from everything that you read. But you should at least feel like you gained something from it. And it didn't just take your time.
Yeah, I get that too. Yeah, I think, because don't get me wrong, I feel like some of those quicker books would be, like, if you're in a reading slump, they're probably good to get out of it because you kind of get the satisfaction of finishing something and you enjoyed it. But I just think about me personally and, like, what kind of writer I want to be. And, like, I would love to write a story about an interracial relationship. I'm in one. I'm married to someone who's Chinese. And I would really want to take advantage and really dive deep into that so people, when they read it, they take something away from it, whether there's someone else that's in an interracial relationship or they've never been in one, or they've always wondered, I wonder what it's like for people who are, you know, I want them to be able to take something away from it. And then sometimes I'll get story ideas and I'm like, you know what, I don't see that being built out into something really detailed, but it would be a good, you know, mini story or something, which can always be good. But you mentioned something, Marissa, that made me want to ask a quick question of both of you, and it was something that I read or heard, was, do you think people who only listen to audiobooks are readers? Because some people might interpret it as, like, the act of reading makes you a reader, but I feel like even if you listen to a book and you get into the story and you come out and you can talk about it, I still think that makes you a reader. But there are some people that I think have the opinion of, oh, well, if you don't physically pick up the book and read the words with your eyes, you're not a reader. So I was curious about y'all's thoughts on that.
Well, I think... Go ahead, Pam.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, I think it's semantics, right? Mm-hmm. I think if we're thinking of the literal definition of reader, then I think absolutely not. You're not a reader. You're a consumer of material, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But if we think about it in the sense of the... you know, connotative meaning of just, you know, understanding the book and delving into it and enjoying it, then you can be, you know, categorized as a reader. I think it just depends on which lens you're viewing it from. If it's more of a literal lens or just like the way that we've associated reading to be. But that's a very thought-provoking question. As you were asking it, I was like, I wonder where I fall on this. Because I think Honestly, I don't know if I'm much of an audiobook type. Well, I don't know. I think it just depends on like the time I have. I have listened to a couple of audiobooks earlier this year, but I think it goes back to the attention span piece. I have to be doing something while I'm listening to it. I can't just sit there and listen to it because, you know, where's the visual part of it? But yeah, what do you think, Marissa?
Well, the first thing I think of is kids right now. The generation that comes after Gen Z. I've been seeing a lot of conversation about how kids who were in eighth grade or seventh grade are incapable of reading. Like, you're like, oh, that's such a generalization, but then to have multiple teachers come on and go, like, y'all kids can't read, and they're in seventh grade or they're in high school. And it's not, that's not new, you know?
Right.
That's years and years in the making. But it makes me think about them because at some point, say that it's kind of like, at some point, if we don't say it's important that you make that distinction of reading versus audio, at some point it's just going to be about audio. Right?
That's true.
If you don't get them in the habit of being active readers now, then audiobooks are going to be not the alternative, because that's what audiobook is at this point. It's alternative. But if you don't get them in the act of reading now, the actual physical thing, they'll just turn to audiobook being the first resource. Right? And so I think there is a concern there, and I think it's important to make that distinction. I wouldn't say that people who listen to audiobooks aren't readers, because I'm an active audiobook reader or listener. And but that's a matter of time, you know, having the time and then having the mental energy to actually look at the words and read the words. Like, at this point, I'm a very active foreign drama watcher, so I'm always reading the screen, always. And it is something that takes a lot of energy. It takes way more energy than you think it would. But the actual act of picking up the book and turning the pages can be exhausting when we are already mentally exhausted. So audiobook is a good alternative. But
I love that.
Oh, go ahead.
No, sorry, you can continue.
I was about to end it. Go ahead.
Okay. I was gonna say, I love that you brought the point about education, because that's something that my mind always kind of goes to working in education. But I think that something that's really important to mention is that now we are seeing the after effects of the arts not being in schools, right? Not to get too political here, but we're seeing the after effects of people valuing more STEM careers, right? So of course we're gonna have more people that wanna do AI type of things. Of course we're gonna have more like computer science majors versus like English majors. You know, I definitely had one of my colleagues that's a professor. He had mentioned something about, like, he kind of was talking down on, like, the English majors because he works in the school of business. And I was like, I don't think you should do that. And I was like, you know, that's why a lot of people lack critical thinking skills these days, because they don't know how to digest literature, read it, understand it, and interpret it. And I'm like, if you don't have that, then you don't have someone that's good at data analytics, because you're not just looking at the numbers, but you're looking at the stories the numbers tell. And it's like, I'm not really considering myself to be a numbers person, but in my field at the moment, I'm having to look at numbers. But what I enjoy is not just the numbers, but the story the numbers tell. You're not just saying three people did X, Y, Z, but what informed these habits and how can we get them to either continue or change? And I think that, you know, if we take out reading, literature, arts out of the schools, if we continue to focus on STEM majors and, you know, forget about the arts, as it seems like people are trying to do, then we will continually have this problem where, as you mentioned, people don't know how to read. You know, you see it all the time on social media where people are forming arguments and you're like, how did you get from this point to that point? Like, there's no, like, your brain is hollow. If you tap on your brain, there will be nothing. Like, you will just hear an empty sound because there are no thoughts in there worth sharing.
That is so right? true.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just wanted to say that I completely agree, because, like you said, I will read arguments on social media, and there's a point A and point B, but how did you get to point B? It doesn't make sense. And some of it, I honestly think it's just their own opinion, but the thing is, they don't have, like, there's not a logic backing it up, and that is so frustrating to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It made me think. One of our questions, actually, is like our final question, and I'm gonna skip to it. It was like, what do you think the next big thing will be for readers and writers? And Infinity, let me think about it a little bit, because interesting enough, when it comes to education and people making fun of people in the arts, right? Mm-hmm. If you didn't have the arts, there would be nothing to sell.
Mm-hmm.
There would be nothing to sell. You wouldn't be able to sell anything. First of all, because half of the time, the writers you need are the ones writing the commercials, writing the speeches, creating the Canva posts that you just don't have the time or space to create. They're creating those. But then on top of that, there's an amount of art, creativity and artistry that you need to create things like Apple, to create things like Canva itself. Right? Like, there's an amount of creativity you need for that. And so to me, it's kind of interesting, because I think there won't necessarily be a next big thing. There is, for readers specifically, I'm waiting to see, it's kind of interesting because Susan brought this up, I'm waiting to see how long BookTok lasts with the way that it functions and the way that it works.
Mm-hmm.
It might actually just go out. And it might grow. I don't know. I don't tell the future. I don't know nothing about that. But I do, the way it functions at this point, I think if publishers don't take a hold of it and in its own way use it, it's not going to be of any benefit to publishers. And they don't take advantage of it. So we'll see how that goes. And then at the same time, the way Bookstagram works in the promoting of the same books over and over again, at some point people are going to feel like it's redundant and it's no longer giving the community that it could be giving.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll go out and it loses creativity, because I think in some ways that's what's missing, is its creativity. Wow. But it's kind of interesting to me that those two things, business and technology, relies heavily on creativity to even exist.
Right.
So to me, if you give up that art, as we watch the kids who cannot read for some reason, this is making me nervous, and we take away their ability to do anything artsy at all, as we watch that happen, and that forcing them into science degrees and forcing them into science fields or forcing them into business fields, and then force them into medicine. We can't. Please don't do that. Please don't force the kids into medicine. But as we watch that happen, we lose all that we could be sold or could build businesses or could grow an industry. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I think about the next big thing.
Oh, I was just gonna say, you know, I don't know. For me, it's kind of hard to predict trends for books. Specifically, like for me, that's almost like trying to think of a new color, like not going to get anywhere with that. But I think we'll see. I think it'll be another new thing. It'll be another wave to ride, another trend. So I think, you know, we'll be around hopefully to enjoy it or criticize it.
Yeah. I think just for the next big thing, I know whatever it is, you know, I'm not 100%. It could be something in regards to writing. It could be another piece of social media where people are promoting books and stories and movies and TV shows. I don't know, because I kind of agree it's hard to predict. Because right now I feel like anything could come out these days. And so it'll be an anticipation, just kind of waiting to see, but I don't think it either will be something that we would expect or it would be something completely out of left field. But those are my
just ended a journey writer's call. We really hope that you enjoyed this episode of They're Written, and that you laughed with us, that you vibed with us, and that you learned a lot, and also that you'll join us again. If you haven't already, go ahead and follow us on our Instagram, our Twitter, and our Facebook. You can find links to any of that social media in our show notes, along with any of the links to the information that you may have had interest in while you listened to the episode. We really appreciate you, and we hope to hear from you guys again. Bye-bye.